Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 227 of the podcast with Fred Bowen, author of Out of Bounds and a slew of other great sports books. Fred talked to me about sports and writing in the best way possible by emphasizing the flaws in his characters, the importance of dealing with disappointment, and his focus on regular kids. In a field such as sports where everyone is asking the question, how far would you go to win? It is awesome to know that individuals like Fred are in front of our middle grade readers sharing these great stories at a time when our readers are most seeking to understand themselves and their limits. Are you ready? Are you pumped? Here's episode number 227 of the podcast with Fred Bowen. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Fred Bowen. I'm excited to be talking to you tonight.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Matthew.
Fred, I love finding out very late in the game that you're local to me as well, that you're Maryland, you're down in Silver Spring. That's great to know that you're so close.
Yeah, I've been around the Maryland area since I went to law school a long time ago. And in fact, I wrote a column recently, I think it was last year, in which I declared that I was officially changing my baseball team allegiance from the Boston Red Sox to the Washington Nationals. And all my friends up in Boston were a little disappointed with me.
the disappointment of you changing your allegiance. I love that.
Well, people take it pretty serious.
They do. No doubt they do. My students all the time ask me what my favorite football team is, favorite baseball team, and I love going to games. I don't have a favorite. I just like the social aspect of sports. It's great. But boy, there are so many times when they're like, who do you root for? Tell me, Mr. Winner. Like, they're sizing me up.
Well, it's true. I mean, the kids, I go to schools all the time, and in fact, I was just in one earlier today, and I was in one last week. I do presentations on the writing process, but lots of times the questions are not so much about writing, but who do you like? Who do you think is going to win? And kids love sports. That's one of the reasons I write about it. And when I ask, you know, who plays sports? Every hand goes up.
Every hand. Yeah. Every hand.
So it's a real connector for kids.
I think so, too. And team sports are such a great way to be connected growing up and learn all of those skills that end up being really sort of life skills, being able to work as a team and rely on one another and communicate and all of those things. Those are really great things that sports teach kids. And this is coming from a person that I did not grow up playing sports, but we are raising our children to play sports. My wife grew up playing, and it's really, really wonderful to see those values, even from age five, being instilled in the children. It's really great.
Well, it's great if it's done right. Sometimes yeah. In my column, I address times when it's not done Right. I sometimes say to parents, I'll just make what I think is an obvious point, and that is that most kids who play recreational sports don't go on to play in high school, and the kids who play in high school, very few of them play in college, and almost nobody becomes a professional athlete. But every one of the kids becomes a citizen. And so if we're not teaching them how to become better citizens through the sports, we're just sort of missing the entire point. And that's part of what I try to get across with the columns, and also get the kids thinking with my books about really what's going on in the game aside from the sports.
Yeah, I love just having not known that you had written this column or that you'd continue. You've written for it for over 10 years, right?
It's 15 plus years.
Wow, congratulations for Washington Post. Yeah, I read your most recent column, and I loved the way that just up front you're calling out the salaries that the different pitchers are getting, for example. And tying it into school teachers, I love the quote on the most recent one was, "Is any baseball pitcher worth more than 500 school teachers?" I thought that was great to be able to ask that question to children and to adults alike, or maybe children and adults alongside one another. That's great.
And I think that's one of the things you try to get the kids to be thinking about some of the things that are going on in sports. The year before I did on Thanksgiving, I said, well, you know, everybody watches football games. And then I mentioned that there was a study done that there's only 11 minutes of action, actual action, in a 3-hour plus professional football game.
Really?
And everybody was shocked by that. But then I said, so what are we watching? And I counted up one Sunday evening all the ads.
Oh, yeah.
It's 152 ads.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, exactly. It's and so I sometimes will look at the kids and say, so what do you think the games are about? And sometimes the kid will say, oh, they want you to buy stuff. I said, that's right. You know, and so getting kids to think about things, using sports to get them to think about things.
I mean, that's so great. I don't even know how else to say it, but it almost feels like, not that it's an anti-sports sentiment, it's not anti-sports at all, but it's much more like deeply rooted to sports roots than it is about the production that we put on around sports and around, you know, the way that the media celebritizes every aspect of it.
Right. Well, if you think of it, I mean, the sports are reflecting what the culture is about. And that was the question about, well, gee, we pay a baseball pitcher $34 million. I mean, that means we value that thing. What we really do is we value entertainment. And to get the kids, oh, okay, thinking about that, is he really worth 500 school teachers? And so those are some of the things. I mean, I don't try to hit the kids over the head with, you know, the lessons of the book or the lessons, you know, because I don't think they'd follow me very, very long. What I try to do with the books is to tell a really good story and get them, but also have something to kind of think about. But also I like to tie in sports history so that the kids see that, oh, this has been going on for a long time. People have been interested in this subject for a long time. And now that I'm interested in it and maybe I'm playing, I'm part of this. And I think that's a great thing for kids.
Well, and I think it's great too, that you've got so many of your sports stories published that you're able to be able to get as many stories as you have out to children and not just in a single sport, but across the gamut of sports. You've written, gosh, about everything, right? You've written about football and baseball and basketball and
soccer. One more.
Soccer. There you go.
Well, and in the column, I write about just about every kind of sports. Although my minister is trying to get me to write about cricket. I'm not sure. I think I might at some point, but I that's on my list.
Would you ever go the route of like, like X Games sports? Like, would you write about skateboarding, about, I don't know, anything like that?
I sometimes have like a character in the book who will be skateboarding or something like that. I think it's not one of the things I like. Kids will ask me sometimes, will you do a book on all these different sports? And some of them are not team sports. And one of the things that's nice about having team sports is that you get the relationships of the players. And one of the things that I've always found fascinating about team sports is that sometimes a minor league baseball player once told me this. He said, you know, you're not entirely happy as a minor league baseball pitcher if one of your teammates is throwing a no-hitter. In other words, you're jealous. You all want to get to the major leagues, and you all want to, and so it's sort of a conflicted situation when one of your teammates is doing great, because he may move ahead of you. And sometimes I talk about that, like in the book Dugout Rivals. It's really about jealousy. And one of the teammates is jealous of one of his other teammates because the other teammate's just better. He's a better athlete.
Right. And that's something that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. If you were writing about an individual sport, something that you're doing on your own, where you are competing against yourself. Granted, there are rivals, but at the end of the day, it's you. It's not the team working to come together. Then it's a different sort of...
No, it's a different dynamic.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic is the word,
I think that the interplay of the characters in on the team, and lots of times I'll ask kids when they've read my books, I said, you know, do the games seem real to you? Do the kids seem real to you? And they go, oh, yeah. And a lot of it is making the kids not perfect. I had a bunch of kids at a local school read one of my books, and I went in for lunch, and we talked about it. And I said, "What? How do you feel about the main character was a kid named Kyle. How do you feel about him?" And some of them said, "I'm not sure he'd be my friend. You know, he's too intense."
Huh.
And so that's, you know, so you want to make the kids regular kids. They're, you know, one of the things I always say, though, is when you write a sports book, the characters always have to care about sports. Yeah. They're the kind of kids who care about this. And you can't have somebody who just says, a main character who says, well, I don't care if I win or lose or make the team. I mean, because, well, they don't want anything. So.
Yeah, but at the same time, to have a character that you don't necessarily see yourself in. You see the love of the game that you might share, but it might just be, well, this person seems kind of like a jerk. I don't know if I want to be on their team.
Well, you know, actually, one of the things though that you do when I write for kids about 8 to 12 years old.
Yeah.
So my books find their way into middle schools, and 7th and 8th graders read them, and sometimes, you know, really young kids read them. But one of the things when you write for the 8 to 12 group is you actually make your main character usually a regular kid. He may have some good and bad characteristics, but he's not a really unusual kid, because those readers, I think, want to identify with the main character. He's the way, or she's the way, for that reader to get into the book. Whereas young adult books tend to be more issue-oriented. The main characters are a little bit different, maybe a little bit more extreme. And that's a way for the young reader to visit that world, a different kind of world. Maybe, you know, I just read one of Laurie Halse Anderson's book. Well, you know, it's a father with post-traumatic stress syndrome from Iraq. Well, that's an extreme situation, but the reader wants to explore that.
Right.
Whereas that's too much for 8 to 10. They kind of want to be the main character.
Yeah, and I love in writing for children the notion that, you know, through books we're able to experience things that we don't have the opportunity to experience, or we're able to work out experiences that we've had and understandings of things that we have experienced by seeing it happen to another character. And so in that way, especially in these sports stories, to make it an everybody kind of child, going through whatever they're going through, that it might not be exactly the way the reader would react, but it most certainly would be something the reader could see if they were on a team this season, next season, whatever. It's not, you're right, some like against all the odds, unbelievable experience, but rather just, no, this is a sports story of something that you might end up telling your friends from, you know, from last season.
Yeah, and also some of the things, they're just common occurrences for kids in sports, in their everyday life. Some of the books, the kids have to really deal with disappointment. Yes. They want to win, and they end up not winning. I mean, one of the things I always tell adults is that one of the hardest lessons that sports teaches is sometimes you try your best, and it still doesn't work out the way you wanted it to. And that is something that if you can accept that, you have just made an enormous step forward in your whole life, because that's going to happen a lot. You do your best, and guess what? It doesn't turn out the way you wanted it.
Right. I'm writing that down. I love that. Sometimes you try your best and it still doesn't work out for you.
Right. You don't think the loser in every one of those pro or every game didn't put in a tremendous effort? No, they put in a tremendous effort and they still lost. And that, I say this all the time to parents. I say that's actually, sports is a safe place for kids to learn to lose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why it's funny. With some of my books, I remember early on, it was my fourth book, Playoff Dreams. Well, the kid loses in the end. And I had kids write me. They were so disappointed. And two kids actually rewrote the last chapter.
Oh.
And put them back saying, well, listen, a couple of things. You know, do you win every one of your games? I don't think so. I mean, I want the books to be realistic. And I said, I also never want you to pick up one of my books and say, oh, I know in a Fred Bowen book, the kid's going to win in the end. Lots of times, you know, I'd say about a third or more, the kids actually lose in the end. And that's, you know, in fact, I'm always tempted to make the kid lose in the end. Because I think that's really where the lessons, that's where kids really learn and progress.
I like, in my brain, I'm thinking of like the possibility for you to sort of be the George R.R. Martin of like children's sports books, where instead of everyone dying in the chapters, right, instead like the team always loses. Oh, it's a Fred Bowen book. They're going to lose.
Right. Now, can't do that.
No.
But, a little too extreme.
But I like actually though, when you look at your library of books that you've written, that you do have that balance of winning and losing and of different characters. You just have, it's a balance that reflects real life.
Yeah, I mean, you try to make the characters realistic. You try to make the situations realistic. You try to make it something that the kids are going to recognize.
Oh, yeah.
I know kids love fantasy, but fantasy never spoke to me. I always liked things that seemed, okay, this could happen.
Yeah.
And I still, realistic fiction, I actually read a lot of nonfiction, history, those kinds of things. So, I mean, that's where my preferences are. And that's obviously that's reflected in what the 21 books that I've written.
Yeah. So your newest, Out of Bounds, it came out in August, right?
Yeah, it came out in August. It's a soccer book. And it really deals with the issues of sportsmanship. And, you know, there's, I think kids, we give them such a heavy dose of, you know, win, 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 that sometimes you have to ask the question, well, how far would you go to win? And a few of my books have dealt with that issue, and this is one. And I think it's it'll be a fun book, and certainly kids love soccer. And one of the things that's great about soccer books, I notice, is they get more girl readers. There are a lot of girl soccer players, and they enjoy my soccer books.
I haven't read many of your books. It's so hard for me to read. My gosh, we were talking about kids before we were recording. When I had kids, suddenly my reading habits changed dramatically.
Well, you'll notice that there'll be a time as you look back, probably as your kids are young, where you'll say, you know, we didn't go to a movie for 10 years.
Oh, believe me, the fact that Star Wars is coming out this weekend is like killing me, knowing that like all of my school, we were talking about sports, what's your favorite team? All of my students are like, Mr. Winter, I'm not going to be at school on Friday because we're going to see Star Wars. Like, well, oh, children, I can't do it. Sorry. But I was going to say, despite the fact that I don't get a chance to read a lot of middle grade, this podcast has been a blessing because it's given me the opportunity to set aside time to read what books I have of people that are coming on. And so it was really great to be able to read Out of Bounds. And I like about your writing style, that quality of feeling like, oh, this is a guy that really does know the game, that really does know how to talk about the game.
One of the things that's interesting is that I think that part of what you're doing for young readers when you're giving or when you're writing a sports book is, without having it be too jargon heavy, is to almost introduce them to the language of sports.
There you go.
Sound of the games and the excitement of the games and just sort of give them a little bit of that taste, which they sense that, wow, this is fun and it's exciting. And there is these phrases and things like that, and which are, you know, you try to work them into the game so that they get the sense that, oh, this is really going on. This is real. And it's easy for me because I've been following sports for a long time and I have been steeped in that language for a long time. And so it's fun to introduce the kids to some of it.
Yeah, but not just that you know the language, but also that when you read it, it doesn't, there's a pacing there that you also have to keep up with. There's an editing that you have to do because while the child is reading, you want them to still be, you know, alongside these characters that are playing whatever game and whichever book you're reading. But at the same time, it still has to be, you know, it still has to be engaging. I mean, I don't know. I think there's a skill there that you bring to the table that I think is really strong, because I think that there's an opportunity for for perhaps over-describing a sport or an event or something that doesn't, that can take you out of what's going on.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was at a writer's convention, actually close to where you are, and this was last spring. And I sort of made up a list of things. I don't have it right in front of me, but a list of things that I thought were important for writing for middle readers.
Okay.
And a lot of it had to do with not having a lot of description.
That seems counterintuitive, but I think you're right.
Well, the other thing too is that all action has to either push the plot forward or reveal a character. In other words, you have to do something that is telling the reader, okay, this is what's going on, or this is what this character is feeling. And if you don't do that, you're kind of wasting time. And a 10-year-old is actually a very impatient reader.
That's where I was getting at too, with the pacing, with doing all that. You have to get to it. You're right.
Yeah. And I think it's actually, I was once, I was down in some sort of convention. I was waiting in a airport, and I saw this guy who was an adult novelist, and I had seen him speak, and I introduced myself, and he said, I said, yeah, I was speaking at the convention. He said, what do you write? I said, well, I just write kids' books. And he said, oh, no. He said, don't say just kids' books. He said, you guys have to tell a story. And he says, I tell my writing students, read, you know, middle grades, read young adult. They have to tell a story. Yeah. They can't just go into the history of the town and the family. And well, wait a second, the kids are going to say, well, what's going to happen next? That's why I always say, actually, to people, watch Hitchcock movies. Hitchcock he told a story and there was no wasted action. And he really, you know, pushed the narrative forward in his films. And that's the kind of thing that you really kind of want to do with young readers.
I can completely understand that too. And I think about in adult novels, how there is that, you already have that caveat of, well, you're an adult, so I can tell this story however I want. We can go into whatever detail we want and it's just going to be fine. But with a kid, you can almost, I mean, anyone that works with kids, I can picture them even just from today, telling them a story. And after just a couple seconds, their eyes just start to wander over your shoulder. And it's that notion of being able to be a storyteller, being able to chop down your words, and until you know that it is the most interesting thing. And in fact, I think that that's one of the things that separates, a lot of middle grade authors, is that there's times, and there's great novels out there, but ones that feel as if they're written a little bit more for adults, for the adult readers that ultimately read them, or for the, you know, advanced readers, then for every child, for every kid to be able to have an in with that book.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting, just in the business of writing, there are almost two audiences, and that is, there are the people who review the books who are clearly adults.
Oh, yes,
and,
yes.
The librarians and the people on Goodreads and, you know, things like that. And they're all wonderful, and it's great that they have opinions and they're getting books to kids. But sometimes I think, oh, wait a second, remember who's reading it. Sometimes when I reread my books, or when I read it, and I will read everything I write, I read out loud.
There you go.
And because I do think that's one of the real keys to writing. And I'll be reading one of my draft novels and I'll say, gee, this seems to be going fairly quickly. But then I'll think, oh, yeah, that's right. It's aimed at basically a 10-year-old who's going to be reading at about half of my speed. And so the pace is really something you're aiming for, your reader's pace, not your, you know, I'm a law school graduate. I was 30 years a lawyer, you know. I read material pretty quickly. I'm not an 8-year-old reader. And so you really have to, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
I would like to go on the record and say that I read like an 8-year-old.
Well, that's fine.
I was told once in college by one of my literature professors, and this was such a sweet thing that I sort of haven't forgotten. He said that there are sort of two kinds of readers, ones that develop this skill to be able to sort of anticipate what you're reading, so you're not actually reading every single word, mm-hmm. get the gist of it. And then there are other readers that read every single word. And you get sort of two different experiences when you walk away from reading, but it does cause the latter to read much, much slower. And so I've always gone, oh, maybe it's not such a bad thing that I read slow. Maybe I'm just reading every word. But,
I know a guy who always said he was a slow reader, and he ended up getting the Pulitzer Prize for criticism.
Oh my goodness!
It's not a bad thing.
It's not
Lots
a bad
of times
thing.
In my books, in the sports, I make the point that there's more than one way to do things.
Right.
The book Double Reverse, which was the book just in before Out of Bounds, it's a football book, but it's really about image. And the main character doesn't think he can play quarterback because he doesn't look like his older brother, who was a star quarterback. And he has to learn that, oh, well, there are different ways. If you look at people in sports, there are sometimes people who have very different looks, but who get the job done in some similar fashion, but maybe not the same way. And that's a good thing for kids to realize.
Absolutely. Fred, I am glad not only that I got to talk to you tonight, but I'm so glad to hear your thoughts on children and reading and sports and all of that, and know that you're out there in front of our children saying these things, and in front of parents saying these things. It just really fills my heart in such a good way, knowing that you and hopefully others like you are preaching the good word like this. It's really wonderful, the work that you're doing.
Well, thanks. And thank you for doing all that you're doing to bring books to kids, because it's one, the librarians are so important. And then, you know, this lively, you know, podcasts and blogs and people thinking about kids' literature. I actually met a woman who writes kids' books, and she also wrote adult books, or she had written a couple of adult books. And I said, oh, how is that? And she said, you know, I'd much rather write for kids.
Cool. I said,
really? And she said, there is no organized institution in the culture that encourages adults to read. And then I thought, that's right. Think of all schools, school librarians, all these people who are trying to get kids to read.
Yeah.
Nobody tries with adults. Nobody like goes up and like, okay, we're going to give you, you know, you're going to have to write a book report on this. Buddy, out of your mind, I don't have to do this. But, you know, with kids, and I think that's such a wonderful value to give the kids, but also the people who are doing it are wonderful. And my joke is always, hey, I was a lawyer for 30 years, and as a kids writer, I get to deal with bookstore owners, teachers, librarians, other children's authors. And I don't want to flatter everybody, but you're so much nicer than the lawyers.
Well, you hit on it too when we talk about our readers and how just all of us, everything that every single one of us is doing is just to lift up those kids. We all just want those kids to succeed and to find themselves in books and to feel confidence and understanding and, I mean, feel like you have a place and that you're connected. And that's a really cool thing that we have not only book reports, but we also have book awards and we have things that are student selected. And we have, you know, in Maryland here, we've got the Black Eyed Susan Book Award, which is a student selected book award, things like that, where you're putting that voice back into the hands of children. It's such a great thing that we've got in children's literature, this great faction of adults that continue to turn to children and say, yeah, but do you think my work is good? Yeah, but do you think this is good? It's such a wonderful thing. I think about, I was telling you earlier before we got on recording that I had a formal observation today. And one of the first things that came to my head after the principal left and I was reflecting on it was, you know, those kids really made me look good today. Those kids really worked hard. And it's that, like, where else, what profession do you get where you get to work alongside these children and lead them and introduce them to new things, but also be so inspired by them and learn so much from them?
Well, it's so much. One of the people would ask me where I got my ideas for the books and where I continue. I coached when my kids were growing up. I coached more than 30 different kids' sports teams.
Oh, my word.
And I said to people, they would always say, oh, you're so nice to do this. And I'd say, it is so, and I would hold my hand at an angle going straight up. I'd say, it is so nice to deal with kids or people who are, this is their learning curve. They are getting better. They are improving. And, you know, they're excited about this. The adults were kind of trying to kind of hang on, but the kids are really so exciting. And like you're saying, as a teacher, to watch them and they're making connections. And when you were coaching kids, to have them actually, you know, make a basket, make a play, score a goal, they'd just be thrilled. And, you know, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I'm hoping through my books and the columns to kind of get kids not only using sports to get kids into reading, because I think both of those things, sports and reading, are just so crucial.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing a really great job, Fred. Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you one more question, but I am excited beyond this to know that you're so local that I'm positive our paths are going to cross soon. Before I go, though, let me take you out onto the field for a different sport. I'm assembling an all-star kidlit dream team kickball tournament. And Fred, I would love to know what one person alive or past from the kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
Well, you know, I'm gonna pick. I was thinking, I couldn't think of anybody, but I'll mention somebody who was the books that I loved growing up. And they were bunch of sports books called the Chip Hilton books. And they were written by a guy who is actually a Hall of Fame basketball coach named Claire B. And it's not that the books were so great, although I loved them. And I don't think that kids, they're a little, oh, a little clunky now. But what they did for me was to get me to really love reading. And, you know, I think everybody who is in this business, or, you know, all the writers, that is really the connection that they're trying to make. So anybody I would put on my team, well, Claire B, because he did it for me, but I would put any writer who is getting kids really enthusiastic and falling in love with reading, because, I mean, that's the whole game.
No doubt. Well, thank you, Fred, for coming on, but also for being one of those writers yourself that's getting kids excited about sports, about reading, about just being a kid and being part of a team. You're doing a great job, and I'm really thankful to have had this chance to talk to you tonight.
All right, Matthew. I hope our paths cross very soon.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed.
Next up on Let's Get Busy, Leslia Newman and Marcus Ewert talk about Quetzal the Cat Who Composed, Mummy Cat, and children's literature representing the LGBT community. And later in the week, Madeline Rosenberg shares the story behind How to Behave at a Dog Show. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.